Excellent. And the weather today, highs of 15 degrees centigrade, lows of 14 degrees centigrade. It'll be rather cloudy, cold and damp throughout the day.
Prime ministers and presidents may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions remains.
And somebody who's never cloudy, cold or indeed damp throughout the day is the fabulous Sarah Bullimore. How are you, Sarah?
I'm good, thanks, Alex. How are you?
Marvellous. Well, in another part of Lincoln, in the city of the joy of Lincoln, just celebrating the happiness of wonderment and so on. And the So Festival, which, as we said last night, when we put David Stevenson sent the message through, went indoors, the Skegness Region Festival, because of the inclement weather, went indoors. Were you indoors yourself, sir, or did you say, no, I'm going to stand out in the rain with my brother?
No, although we were in Spilsby, so I went along on the first night to Spilsby the night before, and it did suddenly throw it down when we were out there, but do you know what? None of the audiences went in. They just put the festival ponchos on and carried on with their circus workshops and juggling and hula hooping regardless. So we're very British.
Or insane, one of the two. Or eccentric, or maybe all three. The So Festival continues, whatever the weather. Would you like to flag up why people should make their way to Skegness in the next couple of days for an extravaganza of wonderfulness?
Oh, absolutely. The So Festival is just amazing, really. So it's an outdoor arts festival and it's all free, which is absolutely amazing. And set against the backdrop of the seaside as well, as you know, what more can you want? There's some absolute highlights that are going on. So it's currently touring around the market towns at the moment with Flamers and Southpaw Dance Company. I've seen a sneaky peek of this. They'll be there at the Skegness at the weekend as well, and they are absolutely fantastic. But there's a bit of something for everybody, really, over the weekend. There's family space, there's some films, there's outdoor opera, and there's a huge spectacular finale planned for the Saturday evening Clash of Drums. And of course, not to mention the cakes, because we've been following that.
Precisely. This is a critical aspect, because we talk about the cakes. Will the cake be left out in the rain, as we were saying earlier and Inspired on Air, or will the cake still be eaten, or will that be under shelter?
It will all be fine. The cake will not be brought out until a little bit before, so it's got a set time. Let me have a look. It's 2 o'clock it is on Sunday that the cake will be brought out and assembled together. So the cake is currently safely inside, so we will not have soggy cake.
And just a reminder that in terms of the cake itself, it's made to basically in the shape of all kinds of wonderful Lincolnshire landmarks and so on, I believe. So you can actually eat the cathedral and so on. Now, I suspect that leading on to our next piece with Nikki Corbishley and Aaliyah Hercules, the notion that social media is making us more adventurous as a nation in terms of our eating habits is all part of this whole system. There'll be a lot of social media pictures, I suspect, of the cake, Sarah.
Oh, I'm imagining so indeed, especially when everybody starts eating it.
And where can people go to keep up to date with all the social networking that's happening with respect to the So Festival?
Well, the best thing to do is to follow on Facebook or Twitter, and it's just So Festival. And also the hashtag is SoFest17 as well. So if you type that in as well, you'll be kept abreast of all news, especially if we move any venues as well, due to the weather as well. So it's best to keep an eye on the social media first of all.
Hashtag SoFestival17. We've got a number of other sort of key things to sort of focus on, but let's move briefly on to the next literary festival, which is of course taking place in Newark. Now, that would be in Nottinghamshire, and that's a matter of weeks away. So again, just tease ahead, please, Sarah.
Yes, it's just coming up to 2 weeks now, which is terrifying. I have a very long to-do list on my desk. No, it's absolutely fantastic. It's going to be on the 15th and 16th of July at venues across Newark. Some events are getting very close to selling out, so I would advise going to check out the programme and book for anything that you really, really want to book for now.
Now, when we talk about literary festivals, clearly you and I go back a wee while, Sarah, and we remember the times when we set up the joys of the Lincolnshire Literary Festival, and of course we're still covering that. In fact, I did a PC only yesterday with one of our academics who's involved in the Gothic, and that'd be Scott Brewster. But constantly, week in, week out, I have the refrain coming from the gentleman you're going to hear next: When are we going to bring back the literary quiz? Yes, John Wenham's in the studio.
Oh, excellent.
How are you, John?
We need to, don't we?
Exactly. I'm fine. How are you, Sarah?
I'm good, thanks, John.
Good, good, yes. Good.
So, you know, it's all right. He's claiming he doesn't do this now, but it doesn't matter. Whatever time I come in, he says, have you spoken to her yet? Is there any sort of chance? No, you're kidding.
He lies, of course.
Are we ever going to give John the umpire the chance to actually cast his critical faculties once more over a literary quiz? Or indeed a general quiz.
We need to, don't we? Yeah, I think we definitely need to at some point soon. Maybe in the autumn we should definitely look at doing something because it always is absolutely fantastic and well attended.
Yeah, and it's nearly 3 years since the last one took place.
Oh my gosh.
3 English years. So you can actually use the old questions, actually, John, because everybody will have forgotten them by that. Sorry, I know you wouldn't do that in any way, shape, or form. All good stuff. Previously on the programme, we've worked our way through a magical menage of material from Michaela Strachan through to Ian Lennox, of course, Tessa Snart, Richard Fitzwilliams, and, of course, the excitement of the World Travel Centre. Coming up next, as we mentioned, Nikki Corbishley and Aaliyah Hercules will be talking about why British folk are using social media channels to find inspiration and also to actually seek the next foodaholic. I'll say that again. A food cookaholic that's actually around. So a specialist in terms of a whole range of things. Nikki Corbishley, of course, was the winner of the 2016 Next Cookaholic competition. It's going to be something you might want to consider, Sarah, because I know that your mince pies in particular could well be considered. So
I think so.
Yeah. And finally, let's talk back about the Newark Book Festival. Where can people go to find out details about that, other than obviously just listening out to the events guide on Sorin FM?
Best bet is to have a look at our website, which has got the programme on there, which is newarkbookfestival.org.uk, but also find us on Facebook and Twitter, which is just at Newark Book Fest.
And what does the rest of the day have in store for you, good self? Is it a case of seeking out various brollies to actually check out the delights of Skegness? Or would it be a case of, no, my troops are in order, they'll sort the thing through? Mm-hmm. Needless to say, we had hoped Eva MacDonald might have been in the studio. I think it's too wet for her to come down the hill. You know,
oh no, that's no good. My day ahead is going to be everything. I'm doing grant assessments for one project. I'm doing SOW Festival plotting and on evaluations. I'm still programming and doing staff rotas and wonderful things for the New Book Festival, and so I'm moving hats lots today.
It's just wonderful. Well, as I say, allowing for the fact that the SOW Festival wraps up with the wonderful extravaganza by the sea. Have you been to the SOW Festival, John?
I haven't, no. Oh, no.
Why not? Why is that?
Go.
Yes.
It's probably free. One thing possibly is that I haven't got any vehicle.
Unbelievable. You know, it's a weak excuse, sir.
Bus service. It's amazing because all our volunteers travel on the train to get there.
You've got the train, you've got your bus. I mean, you know, you've got all sorts of areas there. You should go beyond that, go beyond the sea. Sarah, we'll speak again very soon. We've got the next Inspired on Air coming up, but we'll speak, of course, that'll be after the New York Book Festival. So enjoy, and we look forward to connecting with you in the very near future. And enjoy those grant applications. They should be savoured, cherished. Yes, bureaucracy gone crazy.
Somewhere beyond the sea, somewhere waiting for me, my lover stands on golden sands and watches the ships that go sailing. Somewhere beyond the sea, she's there watching for me. If I could fly like birds on high, then straight to her arms I'll go sailing. It's far beyond the stars, it's near beyond the I know beyond a doubt my heart will lead me there soon. We'll meet beyond the shore, we'll kiss just like before. Happy we'll be beyond the sea, and never again I'll go sailing. shore. We'll kiss just as before. Happy we will be beyond the sea. Yeah, never again I'll go sailing. No more sailing. So long sailing, sailing. No more sailing. Goodbye, farewell, my friend. No more sailing. So long.
From the So Festival, Robbie Williams and Beyond the Sea, on to this thing which has been underpinning so much of the programme so far today, the cooking survey and using social media channels to find inspiration. But of course, the shocking news that 33% of 25 to 34 year olds have admitted they're unable to boil an egg. Now, to address this, we're delighted to welcome two fantastic individuals. First of all, the amazingly talented chef, recipe writer and food stylist extraordinaire. That would be Olya Hercules. Good morning, Olya.
Morning.
And the equally fascinating and passionate cook, blogger and winner of the 2016 NEFF Next Cookaholic Competition. That would be the fabulous Nikki Kirbishley. How are you, Nikki?
I'm great. Good morning.
Brilliant. Olya, if we can come to your good self first. Again, we've had a number of folk who said, boil an egg? Nope, it's beyond me. Or indeed, the other shocking thing, which Tessa Snart was amazed at, couldn't even make a pancake. 25% of women said, don't know how to make pancakes. Are you surprised by this, or is it just a case of, well, that's what happens in the 21st century?
I'm afraid, yeah, that's just what happens, I'm afraid. But it's not that hard to remedy, really.
Yeah. Well, in the studio, we have a wonderful cricket umpire and general all-round extraordinary soul, John Wenham. John, can you boil an egg? Can you make a pancake?
I can boil an egg. I can scramble eggs. I can cook a Sunday dinner.
John, of course, is from the last century. You know, he's sort of moved on from that sort of perspective. But one of the aspects about that is, whilst those skills might be challenging, we've still got the whole notion of using social media to create Instagrammable foods, Buddha bowls, melting chocolate domes, etc. But as I said earlier in the programme, you can't eat a computer or a tablet or a device. So, Nikki, looking to yourself, I mean, you're the winner of last year's Next Cookaholic competition. First of all, what kind of led you to be inspired to enter the thing in the first place, or were you nominated?
The competition was actually asking for people to enter recipes that had a little bit of a twist.
Yeah.
To the recipe, and that's exactly my kind of cookery, really. I like to look at things, look at traditional recipes, and then just see how I can improve it and how I can step it up a little bit.
And obviously, going to the kitchen sanctuary, as far as a food blog is concerned, you've got an ideal sort of one-stop shop from that perspective. But we're looking ahead to the Next Cookaholic. And, you know, Olya, from your own perspective, are things getting better when it comes to British scenarios? I mean, we regularly at this time of the programme feature William Sitwell. He's not on this today, but he will be joining us hopefully in the very near future. And he kind of says, yeah, we're kind of improving slightly. What's your own view, Olya? Are we getting better?
People are getting more curious. I don't know what it's like all over the country, but London definitely is so multicultural, and I think everyone is always looking for a new thing, you know. So in that respect, I think people are more adventurous and more curious. Whether they can still boil an egg, that's another question, of course.
Well, exactly. 4 minutes. And it depends whether you want it running or not from that point of view. It's a whole the debate we could actually have on that. And then it depends which side up you actually eat it. Nikki, why is it so important that we still have these traditional cooking skills? Because, as I said, you can't eat your mobile device.
That's true. I think it's really, excuse me, I think it's really important to kind of have a basis for cooking. So start with the easy stuff, start with boiling an egg, start with being able to cook pasta. And that's where you build from. So, you know, you can create all sorts of fabulous creations with pasta. You know, you can top your wonderful creations with runny eggs. You know, what these Instagrammable content that you do see, more often than not, they have runny eggs on top of them and they just look amazing. Mm. So I think start with the basics.
Okay.
May I just say about boiling an egg?
Please.
It's actually a lot more complicated than you think in terms of you have to be really careful and watch it. If you're a busy mom in the morning and you put it on, you know, you put it into cold water and then you have to wait till it boils and then you have to wait for 4 minutes. If you kind of
you know, forgot about it a bit. You came back and it's boiling, and then you don't know how long you have to boil it for to have it soft. So actually, you know, boiling an egg is not that easy. You just have to be really attentive.
Olya, I hear what you're saying, but I'm sorry that even, and I'm not a chef, etc. But even I managed to boil an egg, and indeed can make toast as well, and do beans on toast. So you know, almost sort of survivalist skills. I don't know. I do appreciate that, but I'm still not quite. Let's talk about the Cookaholics competition. How does the Cookaholic competition actually work?
Well, I'm probably best placed to answer that one.
Indeed, as the winner, of course.
It's split into three stages. So the first stage is to enter a recipe and a photograph of your recipe. So something that is a little bit different, something with a little bit of a twist. So you enter that into the competition. And then those photos that get entered will get judged and they'll get whittled down to eight people. And then those eight people will be asked to provide a short video recording about themselves, you know, why they're passionate about cooking, what they like about cooking, that kind of thing. So just, you know, something on your iPhone, that kind of thing.
And Olya, obviously returning to 2015, you were picked as the Observer's rising star in the food category. What is it that inspired your good self to actually go into cooking? And please don't say, I always wanted to boil an egg properly.
No, not quite. 2008 financial crisis, actually.
Oh.
Well, I've been kind of an avid home cook since kind of university, and then I was a journalist, and then I was about to lose my job, so I decided, what am I doing? I might as well turn my hobby into my profession. Mm. I might not make much money, but at least I'll be happy every day and wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning and just go and do something that I really love.
Which is perfectly inspirational in its own way. So what's the best place to actually go to find out further information about this grand event, the NEFF Next Cookaholic Competition? Nikki?
So if you go to www.nextcookaholic.co.uk, that's where you'll find lots more information, and you'll be able to see the gallery of images that have been submitted and more information about the competition. Mm.
And Nikki, I mean, I know it's a routine, but given Olya's passionate defence of how boiling an egg is not as easy as it might first seem, are you going to stand? Surely it's a fundamental skill in terms of boiling an egg, Nikki. I mean, are you going to say, no, actually, it's quite right. You know, you're a male, you wouldn't understand.
Not at all. I think, actually, there is. I kind of agree with Olya a little bit, because there are conflicting rules about how to boil an egg. Personally, I bring it to the boil and then I turn the heat off.
It's not hard to do a hard-boiled egg. Sorry, that was about soft.
The perfect soft yolk.
That's a bit tricky. I didn't mean, of course, you just leave it to boil.
Well, exactly. That's the line. Good. I mean, John, are you a soft-boiled egg person?
I am a soft-boiled egg. No, I'm not a soft-boiled egg, but I'm a soft-boiled egg person. What I do is to put the egg in cold water, salted cold water, pricked at one end so it lets the air out, and let it come up to the boil, and then boil it for 3 minutes, and it's beautiful. It's a lovely soft.
Is that a worthwhile skill to develop, Olya? Is that the sort of?
I hope everyone is taking notes. I'm sure I am.
Nikki Corbishley, and Olya Hercules, has been a delight touching base with your good self again. You can follow the whole thing through. Nikki, just a quick reminder of the best website to go to. It's
nextcookaholic.co.uk.
Brilliant. And will you be kind enough to hopefully return in the not-too-distant future and keep us appraised of the entries and various other things? And indeed, maybe we'll go on from eggs to pancakes next time, because obviously that's the next
Absolutely.
Time. Brilliant. Nikki and Olya, many thanks indeed. Take care now.
Thank you
for having us.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
He's a walking miracle. Ooh. my baby. I'm talking about my baby, and I love him. He's a walking miracle.
Limmy and the Family Cooking and A Walking Miracle, transcending the notions of our cooking feature and moving into our next little feature, which is all about how school uniforms can hopefully prevent bullying. And to actually address this issue, we're delighted to be able to welcome back to the production a genuine Walking Miracle. She's just an all-round wonderful, perfect person, Gail Porter. How are you, Gail?
Well, you know what? That's the nicest introduction I've ever had.
Oh, thank you, Gail. Let's move on, though, to this particular piece, because I know you're on mobile and doing all sorts of bits and pieces. New research from teachers, parents, school children has revealed that collectively wearing a school uniform helps reduce bullying. Gail, your thoughts? I mean, is that surprising? Were you a school uniform-wearing person? Share with us.
I was absolutely delighted to wear a school uniform because I was just so worried that I didn't have the right clothes or I wasn't cool enough. And, you know, I just think school uniforms is just, it's an amazing thing. And I adults was wearing one. So, you know, you're not up to peer pressure and, you know, you just, everyone's wearing the same thing.
Now, in the studio, we've got a young lady who, Eva McDonald. Eva, you've had a whole range of experiences, including going through. I mean, what are your thoughts on this? Are you a school uniform person? You just left school a couple of years ago, of course.
Hello. Yeah, I'm a school uniform person. I really liked wearing my school uniform. I remember even before I went into Year 7, I probably spent most of my summer just trying on my uniform every single day. But I definitely think that uniform, it really does help to prevent bullying because there's that, as you said, there's that peer pressure to try and look the best that you can be. You see it all the time in American films.
And also, if you can't afford the coolest thing, you've got, everyone's wearing the same thing, and it's standard.
Mm. Yeah, and there's that peer pressure to. I'm 20, so I left sixth form about two years ago. So in sixth form, it's fine because you wear your own clothes, but there's not that peer pressure anymore because you're all a bit older, you're all a bit more mature. But when you're at a younger age, there's definitely that peer pressure in it. It can bring
that bullying. I think when you're like, you know, 10, 11 years old, then things are all starting to change with your life and you just need to, it's nice to actually have that uniform on and go, okay, at least we all know we're on the same page here.
Yeah.
And John, as somebody who's more chronologically gifted, your views on school uniforms?
Well, I think it's harder for a girl than it is for a boy, because boys tend to be dressed very similarly, even if they're in their own clothing.
That's interesting. And Gail, is that something in terms of gender differences? Do you think that's something? Is it you know, different for boys, as the song used to say?
No, I don't think it's different for boys at all. I think it's like males and females should. Sorry,
yeah.
I'm doing a selfie.
That's okay. That's fine. You see, you're multi-talented. And, you know, as a male, I just wouldn't try even that on that one, Gail. But you know, it's wonderful. Go with it.
No, what I was saying, Gail, was so there's possibility.
I don't think it doesn't matter. Gender doesn't matter. I think, you know, boys and girls should all wear uniforms.
Okay, moving on to the whole crux of the whole thing. Researchers, say, commissioned by TrueText, found that teachers, from that point of view, overwhelmingly believe that human forms make children better behaved and also contributes to a happier and more focused classroom. Now, you clearly.
Yeah, TrueText, it's like 9 out of 10 teachers.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, I think absolutely. I was a very happy kid.
Absolutely.
Uniform.
Yeah. Well, it's all marvellous stuff. And if we move to that, the other thing, which is really key importance, it's also coinciding with the launch of an anti-bullying campaign. Gail, do you think we're ever going to get rid of this culture? Because, I mean, surely, you know, we're in the 21st century. You know, bullying should be a thing of the past. It needs to be binned.
Well, unfortunately, I wish it was. Mm. I mean, I was picked on when I was at school. And,
It's because they were jealous of you, Gail. They realised what a multi-talented person you were going to become, and they realised that.
But you know how ironic it was? They used to pull my hair.
There's a whole new series that we can go on for that perspective. Yeah.
But do you know what? I would love to see the end of bullying. And do you know what? I think uniforms are going to be a great thing to sort of end part of it, but it's never going to stop. But.
Well, in some small way, I think you've actually helped us lay a marker down today to actually say no. Say no to bullying, but yes to school uniforms, which is wonderful from that perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, Alex, it's lovely to speak to you.
And two final questions for your good self. It's our customer survey, so we're doing. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today, Gail Porter? Has it been okay for yourself?
Been amazing.
Yeah, I mean, doing selfies, doing mobiles, connecting together with live things.
I even just flicked my hair at you, and I don't even have any.
Oh, wow. So I take it then we can connect with you again in the not-too-distant future.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Actually, finally, if people are actually sort of interested in finding out further information, would they go to the TrueTex website, or is the best place to go to?
TrueTex website is... TrueTex.com.
Yep.
And or if you want to speak to me on Twitter, I'm at Gail Porter.
Well, there we are.
Very simple.
At Gail Porter. Fantastic. So, Gail, it's been fantastic.
So anything you need me to answer, yeah, no problem. Lovely to meet you. Lovely to speak to Eva.
Lovely to speak to you.
Just indeed, I just feel we've bonded. And you're heading off now. Take care, Gail Porter. A round of applause for Gail Porter, please. Yay!
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
Tell my friends cause they will laugh. I love a member of the staff. And I thought my way to front of class to get the best view of her ass. I drop a pencil on the floor. She bends down and shows me more. That's what I go to school for.
Call me crazy, I know that she craves me. That's why I go.
wonder if Busted ever did actually wear school uniforms. Right, it's what they would go to school for. You're too young to remember Busted, I presume, Eva.
No, I remember them. Do you remember? Yep. I do.
Well, here, Eva, as you couldn't actually make the Lincolnshire show, here is your little red goodie bag.
Oh, thank
with
you very much.
Eva McDonald. There's all sort of the week. Well. I kept it, I cherished it, I would wait a week at least until such times as you got back here and there. You've got all your sort of little snippets and things that you would have as a chief midweek drive-out reporter I've actually received.
Thank you, John.
I'm afraid they didn't have one in your particular colour, so that's
That's fair enough.
There's a balloon as well.
There is a balloon
as well.
This
is the exciting part.
This is a win-win situation there, of all things from the Lincolnshire Show, which if you want to actually listen again to some of the excitements that we got up to at the Lincolnshire Show, it's all online, zarinonline.co.uk, or indeed you can go to Southside Broadcasting and find out more details about that as well. Dementia. I'm not looking at anybody in particular with respect to this, but it would seem that 73% of British folk wouldn't go and see a doctor immediately if they were worried about memory loss. Over half of British souls would wait some time before going to see a doctor, despite strong evidence to suggest that an early diagnosis of dementia could help treat or even reverse the condition. We'll be speaking to broadcaster Jenny Bond in a few moments to actually talk about this whole sequence. John, have you met or encountered anybody who's suffering from dementia in your experience of life?
Well, my late father
had
dementia. He had a very severe stroke at the age of 59, which took away his left side. And I was in Africa at the time. I came back and nursed him for 6 years. And latterly, he developed jaundice and then dementia. And
we'll come back to that and actually work through that process, because again, we're going to talk about some of the ways forward with Jenny about her sort of scenarios. And we've also got healthcare clinical services manager and pharmacist Mac Din, who's going to be working through that whole process. Jenny, of course, her 95-year-old mother also has dementia, so it's an interesting connection there. Life continues, and we do our best to hopefully work through that. Eva, we're speaking to Sarah Bullimore earlier in the production.
No, I was just reading the sheet.
Yes. Now, it may well be you've got the ideal rationale here. You're just recovering, so to brave the windy conditions and the rain and the misery of Skegness. No, it's always misery in Skegness. Surely you must be incorrect there. But the cake competition is still going ahead.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so
did not know that.
Even though there's a bit hesitant, but cakes and all manner of things being
made. That's my special area.
Exactly. So I'm just saying that is around, should you wish to actually reprise your role as a festival ambassador that indeed actually brought you to the Midweek Drive in the first place. Fire inspired on her.
I know.
Excellent. And listen, from the notions of superstardom, how did the makeover competition go for your own particular brain tumour charity?
It went very well, thank you. Mm-hmm. So that took place on the 11th of June, and it raised £205 through the Just Giving link. And it was a very successful day. It was 8:30 till about 4. And everyone was really happy with it. And I'm going to create another one probably the end of summer. I'm just trying to figure out dates at the moment, because I also want to do a charity ab sale. So I need to figure out the dates first and then see where I'm going next.
And this was a story that we didn't really focus on when we did the promotional things and the line. I know Ben was sort of saying, why is she doing this, etc. But it's been featured in the Lincoln, etc. You, of course, had a brain tumour when you were just 4 years old, 5 years old?
5 years old.
5 years old.
Yeah, I know. Everyone's really shocked by it, because I never said.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, so that's one of the reasons, presumably, why you elected to actually sort of work with the charity as well, from that sort of point of view.
Yeah, because I heard about the charity when I was doing Miss Teen Great Britain, because I went to a hospice in, it was Bluebell Woods, I think it's Sheffield, and there was a child there who was terminally ill with a brain tumour. And they said how they got a lot of help from the Brain Tumour Charity. And so I got more involved with them.
And of course,
how it all started.
Essentially, you needed for the Midweek Drive. So the fact of the matter was, you couldn't sort of move into a different dimension at that stage. You had to get the whole thing sorted through from that point of view. But extraordinary. I mean, do you remember much about the time? Was it a case of you realised your parents were a bit concerned or worried? Or what was the sort of general line?
I know, I do remember it. Like, I remember being in year one, and then going and then going to hospital. Obviously, I don't remember very much about it. My mum sort of knows more because I was only five. But,
and she identified it, or at least suspected something might have been amiss because of writing, I believe. Is that the case?
Yes. It was when I was in school, and then my handwriting it sort of deteriorated, and then over the summer it became worse. Then I went back to school in the September, and then my teachers sort of noticed that it was really bad as well. So they got on my mum's side and then basically kept pressurising the doctors, because my mum went to the doctors for over a year before that, but the doctors never did anything, which is the really surprising thing.
Sometimes very difficult, the whole life challenge from that perspective, and extraordinary. Well, yeah, just the life adventure continues, John.
It does, it does. Mm. I was just wondering, did you have any headaches as such?
Yes, I did. It was headaches and nausea and a very stiff neck, I remember, especially at night time. I always woke up at about 4 o'clock in the morning, always just complaining about stiff head and stuff like that. Not very nice stuff. Those were the symptoms for every year. And then we just kept going back to the doctors loads of times. And they didn't do anything because they hadn't seen a patient with a brain tumour for over the 25 years that they'd been open. So they never did anything.
Extraordinary.
I know.
There we are. It's Siren FM, Lincoln's first community radio station. We will be focusing on dementia in a few moments, and again, some worthwhile advice in terms of how you can actually sort of maybe take preventive measures to actually sort out the aspects within that whole thing. It's become very medical today, actually, from school, from a whole range of things, pets and various other bits and pieces. But then again, standard typical midweek drive morning edition.
Oh,
And considering those facts once again, dementia affecting around 880,000 people in the UK, and includes those with Alzheimer's, research from Asda reveals 73% of British folk wouldn't go and see a doctor immediately if they were worried about memory loss. We've heard from John Wenham already about how, John, you obviously cared for your father when he went with dementia. We're very pleased now to be able to welcome broadcaster extraordinaire Jenny Bond. Good morning, Jenny. How are you, Jenny?
Very well, thank you.
Excellent. And indeed, I'll say clinical healthcare clinical services manager extraordinaire Mac Dinn as well. Good morning, Mac.
Good morning.
Jenny, if we can come to your good self first. I mean, we've heard a listener about John's tale with his father and having to come back from South Africa to look after him. What about yourself? How did you notice your own mum's health start to begin to deteriorate?
Well, my mother's 95 now, but I think it was about 12 years ago when my father died that it was a real catalyst, actually, in the progression of this disease. I hadn't really noticed before then that anything much was wrong, but she then began losing her short-term memory. We'd be watching a television program, Wimbledon, for example, one year, and she said, "Oh, who's that playing?" She loved tennis, and I said, "Oh, that's Rafa Nadal." And she said, "Oh." And then about 30 seconds later, she said, "Who's that playing?" And this went on and on. And so I was timing, and it became every sort of 10 seconds she was asking. So it's loss of short-term memory, loss of control of your life, not knowing whether you've had lunch or not. In her case, being a very intelligent woman, she wrote everything down clinically in a red book so she could refer back and see, well, oh, I have had my lunch. And that, in a way, is a problem, I think, because it can mask and disguise the fact that things are getting worse because she tried so hard to stay in control.
John, just share with us briefly, I just introduced John Wenham, legend that is Jenny Bond. John, would you like to just share with us your own particular role and how you went through the process?
Yes, well, I'm going back to 1962 when my father had a stroke. And within... For 6 years, I was nursing him, with my mother, of course. And during the end of about 4 or 5 years, he developed jaundice and then dementia came on. In fact, he was only 65 when he died. But he was in the beginning of dementia, as we know it now. It wasn't so sort of... recognised in those days.
It's a really interesting point, Jenny, because clearly, again, as John's just described, we have a situation whereby, you might almost say, dementia just actually arrived in the late 1990s and the early part of the 21st century, referred to as obviously losing one's marbles and various other bits and pieces. How did it actually affect yourself or the family when the dementia diagnosis actually came through?
Well, I suppose by that stage we weren't entirely surprised by it, but I do regret that perhaps we hadn't got advice earlier because it's, you know, we still need an awful lot more research into dementia and Alzheimer's, but there is medicine out there which can at least arrest the progression, if not reverse the symptoms. And I think perhaps we could have done that a little bit earlier.
Turning to Mac for a moment, Mac, this notion of actually seeking medical help when you notice these symptoms, is it a case of, well, we're British, we like to put these things off? Are you surprised by that? And also, why is it important to get an early diagnosis for this issue?
What you find with people is, firstly, they don't want to trouble the GP. I think they believe that they're wasting their time because forgetting things they believe is part of the ageing process. The other issue could be the fact that people think that they are forgetting and they may possibly have dementia, but they don't want to be put into care, so they're really, really worried about that. So they're delaying it as much as possible. Early signs of dementia is really important to recognise those symptoms. We've trained all our pharmacists and our colleagues across Asda State to try and understand what those symptoms are and so that we can refer patients to the right kind of people, to the GPs, so that they can get the best possible treatment. As Jenny's already mentioned, treatment early on stage dementia can possibly slow down the disease itself. So it's really, really important that they do get the treatment. Part of dementia, you tend to lose your short-term memory. and you can slow that down. The second stage would be, because you're losing your memory, you tend to become more depressed. You tend to feel a bit more of anxiety. And therefore, you can treat those symptoms as well. So therefore, treatment is very important in early stages.
Eva, we spoke a few moments ago about your own experience as somebody who, when they were five, suffered from a brain tumour. This is at the other end of the scale. Any thoughts or questions that you have to put to either Jenny or indeed Mac about the dementia issue?
So with dementia, what are the most common symptoms, would you say, apart from obviously from memory loss? Are there any ones that are really, really common to look out for?
From speaking and seeing this out there, you find that just doing the daily-to-day activities, you find that a struggle. Just turning the kettle on, sometimes you don't know how to do that. That can be a difficulty. Even forgetting where you are, what you find is familiar places where you've been there all the time, you forget that you've been there and you're not even aware of it. And it's symptoms like those you need to watch out for.
Yeah, I think it can be very, very frightening. I remember with Mother that she didn't recognise her house. And so we would go perhaps just down to the shops or something. There would be incredible anxiety about where is my house, where is my house? And then we would, on the way back, we'd get back and she still wouldn't recognise the house really until we got right in. So it becomes quite clear that there's something serious going on.
One of our other regular correspondents is the wonderful Angela Rippon, of course, and clearly she also has had challenges in the family with respect to dementia and so on. I mean, Jenny, just briefly returning to your good self, is the prognosis getting better? I mean, because clearly we're more open in terms of talking about the sort of processes from this point of view, but do we feel as though actually there is a genuine improvement that people are, because maybe quality of life is so significant, because obviously we're talking about extending lifespans and so on. Is it looking better than perhaps it was, I don't know, a decade ago?
Well, I think it is, but I think we need a heck of a lot more research. And I'm hopeful, you know, in 25 years, perhaps there will be a magic pill we can pop and it will cure it. But at the moment, I don't think we're there. Where we are is that if you do seek help, we can probably, the medical profession can probably offer some respite, some support. And also, I think if you do go to see your pharmacist and then perhaps your doctor, they can get the social services kicking in, because you are going to need help. You're going to need carers to come in, because it becomes too much, usually, for one family to manage on their own.
And in terms of folk listening to this who are sort of either know people or perhaps engaged with the challenges themselves, where's the best place to go to for further information and details?
So when people want more information, then they should visit asda.com and search for the nearest Asda pharmacy. As I mentioned earlier, we've got over 2,000 colleagues and pharmacists trained, so therefore they could provide you the best possible advice and signpost you to the right kind of people.
It's been a very informative little dialogue. Any final thoughts, John, from your own perspective?
No, I'm just wondering whether or not... you see, I'm going back. I was going back about 40, 50 years, and I was wondering whether or not that 50 years did sow the seeds of the what we know now as dementia. We just called senile in those days, and it's a horrible word, that.
Oh. Absolutely, I mean, there was very much a pejorative sense of the whole system there.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say, Jenny, we're all pretty glad that we've actually moved into slightly more civilised terms from that perspective.
Yes, but obviously we are all living longer, because there have been such advances in the world of medicine, and that's brilliant, we're living longer, but perhaps a little more attention needs to be paid to making the brain live longer as well.
And that's why you are a number one broadcaster, Jenny Bond, and we're delighted to feature you on the whole production. As ever, a genuine delight, and Mac as well. Thank you for your time today. I think it's raised a whole range of issues. A round of applause for Jenny Bond and Mac, please. We're still holding it together. Jenny, many thanks indeed, and hopefully we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future.
Pleasure, thanks.
Thank you, Alex.
radio, online, tablets or phones. However you listen, tune in to Siren FM.
Day by day, night by night, I feel you in my mind. It happens all the time. My main objective, baby, is to get to you.
Robert Palmer, you are in my system before we actually work through the Roll of Honour for the programme today, which incorporates the joys of Tessa Snart, who launched us obviously from Glinton, little place just to the right of Peterborough. Robert Richard Fitzwilliams, The Graduate, Hampstead and Royal Ascot. Paul Nelson from World Travel Market and Michaela Strachan also provided wonderful input into the first part of the programme. So did Ian Lennox and Sarah Bollimore and Olia Hercules and Nikki Kirbishley. Boiling an egg, sorting out the pancakes, all magical stuff. Adds to that Gail Porter on how school uniforms are important, before wrapping up with Jenny Bond and Macdin from basically Asda and pharmaceutical things, etc. So I think we've covered a fair breadth before we even thank you to you, John Wenham, for your little contribution today. Wonderful.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, Eva McDonald, for your contribution today. She also worked through that whole process. And thank you, dear listener, for simply being there. That's it. Coming up later on today, the whole wonderment of Chris Clarkson is with you for Drive Time between 5 and 7. After 7, of course, we've got Past Prologue with Finn Pollard and a whole heap of other goodies as well. This has been the last Midweek Drive Morning Edition for Thursday in June 2017.
Really?
But we'll be back next week with a Midweek Drive Morning Edition for the first Thursday of July 2017. Yay! That's it. Can we all say goodbye?
Bye.
Goodbye.
Back to Robert Palmer, then the XX, then the news. I thank you.
Out. Yeah, I keep blowing.